WLR's My Farming Week, a Desha Today special on some of Ireland's best farms.
Thanks to IFAC, your local food and agribusiness accountants. See ifac.ie.
Well, this morning, Damien, we're out here in beautiful Rink, looking over Dungarvan Bay, Ballycareen Rink to be exact, on the farm of Jamie Costin, dairy farmer, and of course sustainability very much to the fore here on this farm, but also Jamie, of course, well-known athlete and former Olympian. So we're delighted to be out here in Ballycareen Rink this morning. Jamie, first of all, thanks for having us out here.
Thanks for coming out.
Jamie, first of all, taking it back, a young guy going up here in Ring, your dad, Jim, was a dairy farmer. You grew up on a dairy farm. Was dairy farming always going to be the career for Jamie?
I suppose growing up, my sisters and myself, we'd all have been encouraged. Well, encouraged, we all worked on the farm growing up. That was sort of given. I think it's given in every dairy farm in the country that the children would be working. But I was always very interested in the farming, but I was also, as well as that, I used to do athletics, so I would have been very motivated about getting off the farm as well. So right. I'd go out off and do my training and have some time away and actually try and be as good as I could be at athletics.
Your dad was a very progressive dairy farmer back in the 80s. He's over 100 cows, which was huge at that point in time. Education-wise, you went to the local national school in Shannonfobble?
Yeah, I went to Shannonfobble, Santa Claus, Shannonfobble, and then I went to the Dungarvan CBS.
Right. And athletics, obviously, and farming, how well did they gel together? Or, as you say, you were more anxious to concentrate on the athletics as a young man growing up in here in Ring?
I suppose growing up on the farm, if you're doing any bit of work, it's very active. So the farm was brilliant in one way in that you got an all-round general fitness from whether you were running to stop animals breaking out. And so they were doing plenty of work, and you'd be very fit doing it, but then it got to a stage where that if you're working long hours and sitting on a tractor or whatever, you're not going to be able to do the training properly after it.
And obviously your dad being so involved in athletics and being such an efficient and effective dairy farmer at that point in time, getting that mix right, but dad was very supportive of your athletics career, even at the expense of not having you on hand on the farm. At what stage did that become a reality?
I suppose there was always push and pull with that. You know, there was always, he was very happy that we were all athletes, all the family did athletics. He's very happy that we're all doing athletics, but there's also a case that work needed to be done, so that had to be taken into consideration as well.
Then, of course, the big decision, going to UCD, getting the scholarship, making athletics the key front and central for you. That was a huge decision for you.
It was, yeah. Well, I suppose the thing for me with going to Dublin was, number one, that it was a long enough drive away that I couldn't get a phone call to come back if something animals had broken out or that. And that was one side of it. But the other side of it was there's a lot of really good athletes up there. And I wanted to be in that environment, to learn off of those and to be around successful people and to see if I could, you know, become more successful myself at what I was doing. So that was the whole aim of going to UCD, that there was a really good group of athletes there striving to get ahead in the game.
And before we come in here, you mentioned how the whole dedication and the role of a professional athlete, you can carry a lot of what you learned as a full-time athlete back here to the farm in Ballycareen Rink.
Absolutely. I suppose, I think I was saying to you earlier, the one thing that I'm really good at is procrastinating. So I can put things on the long finger, and being involved in sport at professional level for such a long time, you can't do that. So basically I got that knocked out of me. And it's a really good thing because my natural inclination is to put things on the long finger, but I learned over years of being an athlete that you can't put anything on the long finger, you need to do it. So like I was saying to you earlier, my diary is my brain. I write everything down and then I don't miss anything. But if I don't write things down, I'd be the easiest man in the world to forget to pay a bill or do anything like that.
Now, as you started taking athletics more seriously, becoming literally a professional athlete, obviously working on the farm had to be put on the back burner big time. So when there was chores to be done at home, Jamie, you were out training, doing your schedule as against getting involved in the farm. And that was a big sacrifice for your dad, because he was thrilled to see that you were taking athletics seriously, but obviously he'd like to have you helping on the farm as well.
Yeah, well, when I was at home, I was always working. The whole point for me was to be an athlete. I had to get away from home, unfortunately, and that was the reality of it. So basically, for the winters, once I was finished in UCD, putting money together to try and get away for a couple of months in the winter to Australia or New Zealand, training over there, and then coming back and sort of basing myself out of Dublin again when I came back. Right. So it was a case of doing the work I could, doing the training. right. away from home, because basically I had to, otherwise you'd be working when you're at home.
And the dream was for you as an athlete, because your dad very involved and one of the drivers of a very successful Ringall Parish Athletic Club out here, the dream, becoming a full-time athlete and the Olympic Games, but race walking became your discipline of choice.
Well, absolutely, yeah. So the dream was Olympic Games. You know, I saw John Tracy finishing second when I was about 6 or 7 years of age, and I inspired by a Waterford man going off to the Olympics and finishing second. So for me, from a very young age, I knew what I wanted to do, which can be a curse and a blessing as well, you know. But I was driven towards doing that. I was driven towards getting to the Olympics, and that's
and becoming national champion, then becoming competing for Ireland globally, all over the globe really, but getting the breakthrough in Sydney in 2000 and then Athens in 2004, but getting that onto the Irish Olympic team has been a fantastic achievement, and for not alone for you but for your dad and for the Costin family and all of Ringall Parish Athletic Club.
It was absolutely huge, because I would have been like looking at Sonia O'Sullivan finishing fourth in Barcelona in 92, and then unfortunately what happened to her in Atlanta. But like, I would have been an athletics fan, and I'd have been looking up to all these athletes, to Terry McHughes and all that, and there I am in 2000 at 22 years of age, and I'm on the same team as Sonia, and I'm on the same team as Terry McHugh. All these people I'd grown up, they're my heroes growing up. So it was a huge step going from being a wannabe, as all you can call it, you know, I was a young athlete with ambition but no real success, to actually get to the Olympic Games. And it was very surreal being there, sort of in an opening ceremony with an Olympic Games, and it's the whole thing you'd always dreamed of. And it took me a while, but a year or two after that I sort of accepted it more.
You felt that you were belonged there.
For my first time in Sydney, I was like, "Well, mother, geez, Gebre Selassie running around the village," and I'm going, "I've never met this man before." And then he's big smiley face waving at you, and you know, just being in the company of all these top athletes that you looked up to all your life.
And then of course 2004, and you're really at the peak of your career then. You were rated one of the top 10 the world at that stage in the race walking discipline. Unfortunately a bad accident out in Athens, thankfully you came through with it, but it was a career ending accident for you.
It was so there was no real knowledge of whether I'd get back to racing again or not, but like my back was broken in two places. I spent 6 months in a full sort of body cast in my upper body. So it took, the recovery after that was huge, but if it had happened to me a couple of years earlier, I wouldn't have had the support structure around me. Whereas I was 26, 27 years of age, I had some really good physios, the best doctors around. They're all willing to help me, and they all did help me get back on my feet again. So it was 3 years before I raced properly again, but it like I said, it was a very long recovery period afterwards, but I was lucky that I had such professionals around me to help me get back.
At this stage then, of course, your dad busy at home, but restricted by milk quotas. You decided, at what stage did you decide that you were going to come back to work on the farm, or was that further down the road?
I suppose we started planning for it in 07, 08, because, for me, there was a big chunk of my career that went missing when I broke my back. I missed 3 years of championships. So I was trying to get back. So by 08, I felt I wasn't finished.
Yeah.
But we put a plan in place at that stage where the succession of the farm, I bought the farm off my parents, and then I moved back after 2012. That's how it worked.
And part of your education then, you mentioned before we came here, you went to Arnestown Agricultural College, and then you decided to come back home. Milk quotas going obviously in 2015 was a huge handbrake being released for all dairy farms, but your dad had the potential out here. His grassland management, his breeding was top class, so the potential was on the farm.
Oh, absolutely. So we'd be like 150, 160 cows, but we had more than 100 hectares. So the thing is, there was young stock, there was 1-year-old bullocks, 2-year-old bullocks, 2.5-year-old bullocks. There's all sorts of groups of animals all over the farm. So the farm had potential to grow cow numbers. So when I came back, I just started building roadways, connecting the farm up so that it could all become milking. All the grazing platform could be all utilised as grazing platform.
When you expand like that, the breeding becomes a huge part of it. And that at what stage, obviously we'll talk about your advisor and help along the way, but the breeding became such an important part, the herd, the breed of the dairy herd here in Ballycoreen.
I don't think there's no such thing as original thought. And we were, my father was always very progressive going to discussion groups and that. And so we went to Dungarvan group, but also the 1250 group.
Right.
And I didn't have to look too far to see what best practice was in the group. There's a lot of guys operating at such a high level. So I think all I did was copy them.
Yeah. And of course,
so, no, I'm really mean it. Like I could see this, what some guys were doing and getting great results and doing their 450, 500 kilos of milk solids off very little input. And for me, that's the direction I wanted us to go farm wise. So I started breeding that way.
Expansion is one thing, but then as you expand, keeping that high quality, keeping that high results and yields becomes a more difficult obstacle to get over. The team around you is important. Yourself and your dad working hand in hand there, but getting guys then on the farm, all like-minded people involved with the herd here at Costin's Farm in Ballycreen.
Yeah, well, I suppose when I came home, Edward Hickey has been on the farm more than 40 years now, and Edward still views me as a four-year-old, you know. He still views me as a little child who can't do anything. But Edward was great. My father got pretty ill the year I came home. He got a heart attack, so he took a step back at that stage. But like, it's great to have him there for advice. And the most important thing was when we were building up the numbers, like you said, getting the right people on board. And we're great. Like, I've got Simon Lawrence working with me now the last 4 years, and Simon's brilliant. And Michael Flynn, a young lad from down the road, is working with me this year. He's a student. He's on board with me for the year.
Well, Jamie, it's a great success story. We'll take a break here, but when we come back, we'll be looking at the Costin Farm today and the plans for the future in this difficult time on any dairy farm. And hopefully we'll have a quick word with Chris, your vet, very shortly. Join us after the break. Well, I'm delighted to be joined here out in Costin's Ballycurian Ring by their vet, Chris Humphreys of Daisha Vets. First of all, Chris, a hectic farm out here.
Well, it's a busy spot, but you know what, it's great. It's it runs well, and there's, you know, there's a lot of people involved here. There's Jamie, and obviously there are a number of employees, so it's a significant operation.
A vet, and Jamie mentioned before we came on air, it's so important. You work hand in hand together, really going out there in a preventative state rather than you coming out here as a firefighter for problems with herd health.
Well, absolutely. I mean, look, I've known Jamie now for a good many years. I knew Jamie before that. And the most important thing for us is, if a problem arises, sure, you have to address it at the time. But far more importantly is, how do we avoid that in the future? Now, whether it's in the springtime, is busy for everybody. But like that, if you can reduce the amount of problems, things like milk fever, calf problems, if you can avoid those, then it means less stress for everybody at that time of the year.
Milk recording is key, and obviously again here on the Costin Farm, milk recording is so important, keeping people abreast of what's actually happening. It's knowledge at your fingertips.
Milk recording is vital. I cannot really see how, if anybody thinks they're going to be staying in dairying in the medium or long term, that they cannot be but be milk recording. It gives you so much information. It gives you information on the quality of your cows. Right. It gives you very great information as to, look, which cows will you keep? Which cows will you breed? Which cows will you cull? Right. Whether it's cell count or whether it's performance parameters, like solids, all that volume, you know, you can't do without that. Right. And particularly say, you know, even say for something like planning for drying off at the end of the year, you need to know, look, if you've got cows there that are significantly high cell counts, you need to decide, am I going to treat them? Am I going to cull them? You know, that, and without that information, you know, it's all very well thinking you'll see the cold mastitis. A lot of the time you won't. But like that, you have to make your decisions based on actual data that you'll get.
You mentioned about Jamie and his crew here working on the farm, but very much you're part of this team as well. You work very much hand in glove, yourself and the farm here out in Ballycreen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'd be regularly in touch with Jamie. You know, if Jamie has an issue, whether it's something that comes up on the milk recording or something that they realise, look, we're getting an issue with something, Jamie will talk to me and we'll decide, look, first of all, we'll decide what is actually going on, and then we'll decide on a strategy of how we deal with this and how we avoid it in the future.
Chris, a lot of criticism, we spoke to Jamie about this, about the dairy industry, but a lot of negative comment, obviously a lot of challenges out there with the 25% reduction in emissions and that. Are you finding that going around to farmers, and indeed the standard of farming here in West Wofford? I know you're a proud Limerick man, but what you've seen on farm and what you're hearing in media?
It's topical. There's no question about that. And it's a challenge. And look, there are national targets for emission reductions. We already know the 2030 targets it would be very ambitious and optimistic to think that they're going to be met, but there still will have to be effort made. Now, the big questions will be, how do we go about that? And it's not just the carbon, obviously, it's water quality. I mean, the EPA reports came out again. There has to be an issue, there has to be questions, and then there have to be answers. But we have to look at solutions. And, you know, I mean, the simple thing that people will always say is, oh, well, you just reduce numbers. But the reality is, you know, we have a dairy industry in this country which has evolved over the last 100 years from when the cooperative movement started, which made an extraordinary transformation in the whole rural economy of this country. And you can't just say that, oh yeah, we're just going to get rid of all that. That's simply not going to happen. Also, we have huge international exports. You know, I mean, the bulk of what we produce is exported. And that's something which, you know, it underpins a huge amount of employment in this country. So, look, then the question is, well, OK, how do we tackle those things? And obviously, the more efficient we can be in producing milk, producing beef, then that means that the overall impact of what we're doing is reduced. And obviously, there'll be issues around land use. You know, but that's something that, you know, it's outside of my brief, if you like, but that's going to be a whole part of it as well. But certainly, if you can reduce wastage, if you can improve the health of herds, then you can produce from fewer animals. You know, and doing that, it's not something, that requires planning.
Yeah. Well, definitely, Chris. Chris Humphreys here of Daisha Vets. I know yourself and Jamie here on the Coston Farm work hand in glove. And as you say, herd health is key to all of this and this huge effort going on farm. And Chris, thanks for taking time out to talk to us.
No problem. You're welcome.
Jamie, as I say, currently the numbers have grown and grown over the years, but the challenges now, the whole area of sustainability, the environment, farm emissions, my God, the landscape has changed so much in the last 10 years.
I suppose when I came back first, everything was about expansion and taking the opportunities. But in the background, there's always this piece coming from New Zealand about the social license to farm that I was sort of paying attention to as well, because if the public don't like what we're doing, things can change very, very quickly. And you can see with the legislation coming down the line from Europe that, like, this the nitrates banning, and on top of that then the derogation going from 250 to 220, you know, it's like that's been pretty much set in stone for the last 2 years. They knew the EPA, the rivers weren't going to get much better in the 2 years, so basically that report that came out last week, It was a fixed job. Yes. there was never going to stay at 250. So for me, I'm sort of trying to look at where things are going that way all the time. And this 220, if we go back to 170, it could be where we're going to be going at. And that'll mean a different way of farming. But I suppose we're trying to change what we're doing here the last few years, like reducing sort of fertilizer, you know, bringing clover and all that sort of stuff. So we're trying to work the right way towards the signpost, like the whole signpost.
And of course, it's all about reducing. Like, the target is 25% by 2030, reducing greenhouse gas emissions. But you have a lot in train, both from particularly in the biodiversity and, first of all, tree planting. You've done a lot of it here.
My father put a forest up in 1983, 84. He just planted marginal ground we had. So that was felled in 2016 and replanted again in 2017. But so we five hectares of trees planted. And so there was some native, it was like a 50-50 native species, and like beech and larch and oak. But I wanted to, because we got land that's down beside the river, so I wanted to plant more of it. But unfortunately, there was no grants in place. There was no, it would have cost about 40 or 50 grand, which is that's money I didn't have anyway. But I'm hoping now with the new forestry planting thing that came out last year that there's going to be grants for it. Hopefully I'll be able to avail of that now, and just that's in motion, but I'm not after getting any confirmation whether we can plant that or not yet.
You mentioned there about the whole clovers being used in grass seed mixtures. How have you kind of intertwined that into your setup here, and how well has it been working, the whole clover mix in your grass seed mixtures?
It's working really well. I suppose there's...
Of course, to explain to non-initiate, to help reduce the nitrogen requirement.
Yeah, so the clover fixes nitrogen out of the soil, which, you know, reduces the need for you to spread as much chemical fertiliser on it. But, like, we've been using protected urea, which is it's a coated product that... I can't actually remember the exact figure, but the nitrous oxide emissions are hugely down when you use protected urea apart from urea. We've been using that we've only used that since 2016, 2017. We put in place all of the things that need to be done for signpost farming. We actually hadn't placed since 2016, 2017. So that's sort of the way we're working.
Trailing shoe, then, of course, again, it's a new environmentally specific method and system for spreading slurry. When did you get involved with the trailing shoe system?
Well, we've had a contractor doing all our spreading since about 7 or 8 years ago. So we've been using trailing.
Has that been a big help?
It is. I'd say you're getting a lot more effective use of the slurry. Okay. So I think it is. I think it absolutely is growing. Like even a couple of weeks ago, after the first cut of silage, we put on four of the fields that were just grazed. Yeah. We were doing the trailing. We were putting out the water, but we put water out on the 2,500 gallons on the four fields, the last four fields that were grazed by the cows. Okay. And the cover was, like, we've gone through a bit of a drought. The covers were coming back brilliant on those compared to the rest of the farm. So it does work. You know, the watery slurry on the ground does a great job.
Jamie Dearing, it's a way of life. You're a professional athlete, now you're a professional dairy farmer. The commitment involved is just unbelievable, and people on the outside don't realise it's 24/7. I know your wife Susan, who's from Slovakia, you have three young boys, but farming is your life, and indeed it's a 24/7 life.
It is, but it's what you choose it to be too, Kieran. Like, it's very, like, during the spring, there's no getting away. February, March and April are just crazy months, but like I try and think that we can get away from the farm a bit. Like, I coach athletes, so I'd be away traveling with athletes a good bit. And Susie's also she's a technical official for World Athletics, so Susie's going to be gone more than me this summer.
And you met her through athletics?
She was an Olympian as well, so both myself and Susie, we met on the circuit, met in Krakow.
So these three little boys are bred in the purple.
No pressure on them at all. So, yeah.
But as regards the commitment on farm, and indeed the advancement with your facility here, you have a rotary parlour, you have lots of new buildings. Huge investment, Jamie.
It was. That's like, farming is a very capital intensive business, you know, and the way I was looking at it, like I said, in our discussion group, we had a lot of guys who expanded post 2015. And when I went about researching what way I was going to, we had a 20 unit parlour, we're milking more than 300 cows. Yeah. So we're going up to 15 lines, 17 lines, 19 lines. It wasn't sustainable to be milking that amount of cows and it's a very good parlour, but just too many cows for it.
And has the rotary really changed that for you?
It's been a huge thing, yeah. So what we did was, there's some of the guys who've gone through expansion mode before, so like Ollie O'Gorman, who's on about 15 farms at this stage, but Ollie was onto his third or fourth.
Lesher.
Yeah, himself and the brothers. Yeah. But they're absolutely flying, but Ollie was saying absolutely no, he wouldn't see the economic benefit of doing a rotary. But for me, I was sort of knocking ideas off of all the guys in the group, and it came back to it, the cost, the portion of it, it would have been 150 or 200 grand to do a 30 unit parlour or 36 unit parlour where you'd have two people milking, whereas you're looking at an extra 45,000-50,000 euros to go build the rotary parlour. So for me, I think it was for the long term sustainability of the farm, it was a no brainer to build this, because you're milking 400 cows in just over an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and 30 minutes, so it's
unbelievable. But as regards the breeding being a key factor, does the negative, we'll say, media and negative vibe about dairying, the problems that dairying has caused the environment, does that upset Jamie Costin?
It's such constant negativity, you'd sort of, to say it's mostly on the Twitter world, though, you know, so like I'm dipping in and out of that once every 2 or 3 days. I think you have to know what you're doing and believe in what you're doing. And if I thought I was doing harm, I wouldn't be doing it.
Right.
Am I doing a job better now than I was 5 years ago? Absolutely. Am I more aware of, you know, fertilizer and using phosphorus and potassium and all at the right times? Absolutely. And I think I'm still learning. And I suppose the way I'd look at it, Kieran, is that for me, farmers are not out to pollute. There's always bad eggs and everything, but most farmers actually want to do their best. So I think if we can keep working with TAGAS, the signpost programs, George Ramsbottom's after taking that over now, and George is a very smart man, a very good guy. And I'm looking forward to learning more, and I'm looking forward to saying to you in 5 years' time, Kieran, Jesus, I'm farming a lot more sustainably than I was 5 years ago in 5 years' time. So hopefully I'm just learning and getting better all the time.
Well, Jamie, you mentioned about Signpost Farm, but definitely what you've achieved here, and your dad, of course, started it all off all those years ago, back in the 80s with over 100 cows, but what you've achieved here and the sustainability level of what you've achieved with such big numbers, to you and all involved, to Susie and to all the team here out in Ballycureen. Listen, congrats, well done, keep up the good work.
Thanks a million for coming, Gary.
WLR's My Farming Week, a Daisha Today special on some of Ireland's best farms.
Thanks to IFAC, providing tax and accountancy advice for your farm business.